is the 21st of May. This is my 5th weekly podcast. I hope you like it. It's quite different than 4, 3, 2, and 1 in many ways. And quite the same in many other ways. The two songs you just heard, one is Españoleta by Casper Sanz. And the second one was Fernando Carulli. Two entirely different regions, played the same way. So let's see, what do we have for you this week? We've got Media Minutes. We've got, you could call it a mashup, but I really, really hate mashups. And it's different than any mashup you've probably ever heard in your life. You got some talk from me. I'll probably read some headlines. And maybe we'll end with another classical guitar song in my personal troubadourish ambassadorial attempt at getting all of you in a space where you really like and really enjoy and really appreciate classical guitar. So I'll always have a job when I become an old man. So enjoy.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
Among the many politicians in attendance at the National Conference for Media Reform in St. Louis were Democrat FCC Commissioners Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein. I had a chance to sit down and talk with Commissioner Copps on a variety of subjects. The largest ones on his mind are the impending congressional rewrite of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and the FCC's second stab at revising rules related to media ownership. After the revisions made in 2003 were torpedoed by massive public outcry and a successful court challenge, Copps is concerned that the next go-round may occur with even less public involvement.
A lot of these big media companies may be thinking, well, let's see here, we've got control for a while longer here, so why don't we just kind of doing a piecemeal approach. We'll repeal the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule 1 month, or we'll do something on duopolies the next month, a little bit at a time, don't get people excited. And if that strategy, if they get away with that strategy, we lose. Media democracy loses.
Instead, Copps would like to see a completely transparent process on any changes to media ownership rules, including nationwide hearings that the entire five-member commission would be required to attend. On the congressional front, Copps thinks the FCC is not serving the public as well as it could.
I think that the Federal Communications Commission could be doing a lot more to facilitate the passage of enlightened telecom legislation. We ought to be teeing up options for the Congress. I think Congress has a right to expect an independent agency to do that. And in point of fact, we have not been doing that.
There are several initiatives Copps would like to see the FCC take more seriously. One of them, he says, is an expansion of the low-power FM radio service. That's long overdue. A couple of years ago, Copps even expressed a smidgen of solidarity with an unlicensed broadcaster in Vermont who challenged FCC licensing rules in order to demonstrate their lack of service to the public interest. He stopped short of reiterating that sentiment this time, but still recognizes the need to expand real local community media opportunities.
In the atmosphere that we live, you can understand people getting frustrated with that and maybe getting involved in ways that go beyond where they should be involved. I think it just gets back to really the need to make sure we have good processes for low-power stations. And that's what we ought to be focusing on.
While most of the conference action stayed confined to the Millennium Hotel, a small group of activists took a two-block walk downtown to visit a radio and television station owned by Viacom. FCC regulations require any radio or TV station to keep a public file, which includes program logs, various financial and employment disclosure documents, and feedback from viewers and listeners. FCC rules also require stations to open their public files to public inspection during normal business hours. Mitchell Stepinchik of Chicago Media Action ended up at Viacom's TV outlet KMOV Channel 4.
I was with a team of four people, saw a number of very well organized, probably an array of maybe an entire half room full of files. We could only see a number of them just given the time issues that we were operating under. They were a little bit surprised, since I imagine, in fact they had said so, that it almost never happens. It took a little bit of time for them to get their act together to actually invite us in and show us the files. But nonetheless, once they did, very cordial, very helpful.
Pinchuk managed to examine some canceled checks from political advertising run during the 2004 elections and some documents involving the station's commitment to children's programming. The most impressive find was KMOV's Dan Rather file.
Reams upon reams of printouts of emails from probably all over the country, never mind just St. Louis, in which people were complaining about Dan Rather, that they hate Dan Rather, that they want him off the air. They're just spewing bile and venom with regards to Dan Rather, and it filled an entire filing cabinet.
Stations that fail to properly maintain their public file or fail to allow adequate public access can be fined, although a station has never lost its license for a violation of the public file rules.
And now, here's a Media Minute's Fast Fact. Major record labels claim that file sharing is killing the music business, but the stock prices tell a different story. In 2004, the parent companies of several major labels posted gains. For example, Sony shares gained 12% over 2003, Vivendi Universal rose 32%, and EMI was up 66%. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
FSCK, the corporate media, is a presentation of ATI Zine along with Prime Anarchist Productions. This podcast will be broadcast on a webcast with a once-a-week deadline, and our goal will always be to keep it under 39 minutes so you can put two shows on a disc and hand it to someone who doesn't have internet. If we go long, please edit us from the bottom up. Don't hate the media. FSCK, the corporate media. But first, these headlines. God, I love saying that. Anarchist killed by police in Colombia. Over 40 Chilean soldiers feared dead in the Andes. Cuban militant Luis Posada jailed. Augusto Pinochet hospitalized. Police detained an independent journalist and charged him with assaulting a police officer. Activist detained at Council of Europe meeting. EEUU Senate remains obsessed with Hitler and Darth Vader in their bitter fight on judges. James Galloway, James Galloway, James Galloway. I am Sista, arrested in Milwaukee protesting Bush. Thank you, James Galloway. Portland police officers required to carry tasers starting June 1st. All around the U.S., recruiters are feeling the heat. Would you buy from this man a submarine? Did I say thank you, James Galloway? More Saddam photos. Yuck, have some maturity, would ya? Filibuster. Forget about the filibuster. Hey Bush, how about a moratorium on the Social Security issue until after you left office, okay? Did I say thank you, James Galloway? Cops detain five at peaceful Bush protest in Milwaukee. Peter Young court date in Madison, May 24th. The government dropped charges in federal court this morning against Judith Williams and Betsy Lamb for an action they took during SOA Watch's February Lobby Day. Early in the morning of February 22nd, 2005, dozens of peace activists who traveled to Washington, D.C. for SOA Watch Lobby Day events gathered for a vigil at the Pentagon calling for the closure of the SOA WinSec. Judith and Betsy were arrested after they knelt down in peaceful protest and blocked the entrance to the Pentagon. Christine LaVallee was also arrested and will go on trial in July. Get the rest of the story at http://www.soaw.org/news/newswire_detd=850. Call it a book review, call it just reading something from a book. Call it what you will, but the book itself is called Haas Head Companion, and it's written by my good friend Patrick. Come check it out, would ya? Alright, I'm skipping over the introduction. We heard that in podcast number 3, I believe. RCA's Gold Standard Series? Nah. The Waylon Jennings album list. MacArthur Park, Cindy O'Cindy, Games People Play, Today. Yeah, you should brush up on your Waylon Jennings, I'm telling you. Folsom Prison Blues, You Gotta Hide Your Love Away, Love of the Common People, Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town, Only Daddy That'll Walk the Line, Such a Waste of Love. Fallen Out, Which way do I go now that I'm gone? You put the soul in the song. Will the wolf survive? One of my bad habits. Willie and Laura Mae Jones. It should be easier now. Do no good woman. Sweet dream woman. To beat the devil. Are you ready for the country? Waylon Jennings. Waylon Jennings. Waylon Jennings. Did I say thank you, James Galloway? Bridge over troubled water with Jesse Coulter. Have you ever heard Waylon Jennings sing Peggy Sue? I haven't either. It's pretty good, I think. At least I trust it's pretty good. It's by Waylon Jennings. That's all I'm going to say. Whew, the essential Waylon Jennings. This book is phenomenal, dude. He's got screenshots of just about every album Waylon ever did. Discography, etc. And like I said, I'm skipping down. There was a glossary in here somewhere that's like incredibly helpful if you're looking at non-corporate rock and roll or non-corporate music. You know, the whole anti-Sony thing, anti-Bertelsmann, etc. All right, glossary. A&M Records, first record label Waylon was signed to in 63 when RCA offered to sign Waylon in 1965. Label founders Herb Alpert and Jerry Moss released him from this contract. You'll get that. Alpert is the A and Moss is the M. They thought they were all that. Bootleg. An authorized issue of material not otherwise available for retail sale. As a rule, bootlegs are more desirable than counterfeit recordings due to the fact that many bootlegs contain material found nowhere else. DVD stands for Digital Versatile Disc. Popular video and audio format. Bitch didn't know that. Quadraphonic, do you remember quad? A recording with four separate audio playback channels. This format was popular throughout the 70s. This should not be confused with a multi-track recording. Session tape, the tape from a recording session. This is the tape from which the multi-track will be derived from. I'll pick maybe just one more. Test pressing. Pressing a record for evaluation purposes. These are almost never commercially available as they are intended to be used once or twice. Test pressings often, but not always, deviate from the finished commercial product. These snippets have been from The Hosshead Companion, written by Patrick Moore. He ends with, "This is a listing of people who helped make this book possible. Please do not hold it against them." Frank Zappa, Clive Davis, James Thurber, Gene Baldwin, Eric Boucher, Michelle Parker, Jello Biafra, Abby Hoffman, Bill Gates, Gregory Price. Have I said lately, thank you, James Galloway? And in Zine News, have you heard of Downward Mobility Zine? You can send your emails to Downward Mobility Zine, care of Dawn, P.O. Box 961, Lake Worth, Florida, 33460, or email it to spidersneeze@hotmail.com, spidersneeze, spelled as sounds. And now, Sasha Meinrath teaches us just what's wrong with the movement today.
There's over 150 independent media centers in 50-plus countries worldwide, and this IMC here in Urbana-Champaign is the umbrella under which the entire global network operates. We are, in essence, the global headquarters for the indie media movement here in Urbana.
Send us audio feedback. No, don't Skype me. Call 860-887-2600, extension 5293, and leave it there. We'll go right to Wave and get it up there ASAP. I'd like to suddenly give a random shout-out to the peeps at odeo.com, O-D-E-O.com, audio. And now a few poems from my chapbook, Poems for the Pentagon. This is called King Little. There's something coming together at 125th and Lenox. And there's still something coming together at 125th and Lenox. About 100 million dreams are still deferred. That's what's still waiting to come together the rest of the way. This is called Spalding, China, 7 May 01. George W. Bush passing out balls to the little black 8-year-olds. Boys and girls on the blue Little League team. Balls to the little white 8-year-olds. Boys and girls on the red Little League team. After they played T-ball, balls on the White House lawn. Passing out white presidential balls. The bleachers didn't look the least bit segregated. Nope, blacks and whites all enjoying a game together. The team sure did. I counted one black child on the white team. Double take with my head. Did I count one or zero? Either one or zero whites on the black team. Two parts of town, two parts of the world. A world apart, two parts of the disunited States of America. File, system, check. F, the corporate media. F, the corporate media. F, the corporate media. News you can use every Tuesday for when they abuse and try to put the screws to use. Kudos to Free Radio Santa Cruz, Free Radio Dallas, Radioactive San Diego, August Sound Coalition, Enemy Combatant Radio, Kill Radio, Portland Indie Media, DJ Scophany, DJ Protesta, Bad Cop No Donut, and of course Blast Furnace and Party Town. Go peeps go. The views expressed here are the views of people who have these views, and if you don't like it, then file sys check you. I'm DJ Microbrew. This has been weekly podcast number 5 of FSCK, the corporate media.
Hello.
Laters.
I'm the voice inside Bush's transmitter. He is about to give a speech in Milwaukee about gutting Social Security and turning it over to our own personal friends at Enron, WorldCom, Halliburton, and the Texas Rangers. Come with me. I'll let you listen in some. Oh, he already started. I wasn't paying attention.
It's been an amazing time,
oh,
well,
sorry,
to
watch.
Back. To see these people around the world demanding their freedom. And it's such an honor to be a part of helping people realize the great potential of a free society.
Squeeze your hands.
Amazing moment to
stand
in Georgia, Tbilisi, Georgia, in front of over 150,000 people. They were so thrilled to see a representative of the United States. And they were thrilled to see us there because we stand for freedom and human dignity and the belief that everybody counts and that you ought to be able to worship freely.
Yes.
I hope you take great pride in what America stands for and know that as we spread not American values, but God-given values around the world, this world is a better place.
Yes. You remember God. Yes.
I want to thank Congressman Paul Ryan.
Yes.
He's one of the bright lights in the United States Congress, a very sharp guy.
That was good. That was so good.
I jumped on Air Force One.
No.
Easy ride home, okay. Right, Ryan? Are you going back? Oh, he is going back. Good. But we spent a lot of time talking about this issue. He's a smart guy and cares a lot about the Social Security issue. I really appreciate you taking time out to come and hear this discussion. I want to thank Andrew Ziegler, the president of the Milwaukee Art Museum, and David Gordon for letting us come by here. What a fantastic building. I mean, it's really a... I know you're incredibly proud of this fantastic facility, and I know the citizens of Milwaukee support it strongly, as you should. So thanks for letting us come by and use this facility. Look at it this way, it's a chance to show it off for the world, to the extent the world is watching C-SPAN. I just had an amazing experience. I stopped by a business here called onmilwaukee.com. A little bit of a following. Things are catching on. I rode over here with Jeff Sherman and Andy Turnoff, two young guys, Milwaukee citizens who started this company, entrepreneurs who took risks.
Nerds.
To put out a product people obviously want. It's a fast-growing little business. I met our participants over there to talk about what we're going to do here.
Don't
but also, I love to see
bees.
Entrepreneurs. You know,
Don't
part of the role of government is
bees.
To create an environment in which people are willing to take risk. And people, you know, these low taxes, reasonable regulation. You got to get rid of all these junk lawsuits that are threatening small businesses, job creators. But I want to thank Andy and Jeff and their employees, our associates, for welcoming there. And it was, thanks for putting me on the front page of today's edition.
Whatever.
I also want to welcome Jack Voigt, the state treasurer. And the state Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz. See you, Dale. Tell your wife hello.
No.
We traveled on a bus together. Let me start off on Social Security by saying this. Franklin Roosevelt did a smart thing.
Right.
In setting up a safety net.
Yes.
For people who, when they retired, would know they would be able to more likely live in dignity upon retirement. He did a smart thing, and it worked. Social Security worked for a long time.
Hiss your S's.
As a matter of fact, I fully understand that right here in the state of Wisconsin, a lot of people count on the Social Security check. And where Social Security is really important for a lot of people's lives. My home state of Texas, a lot of people rely solely on their Social Security check. And as we discuss Social Security, it's important for the people of Milwaukee to understand, and Wisconsin to understand, that this discussion we're having really is not about you, but it's about your children and your grandchildren. Because I can look in the camera and say with absolute certainty, if you're on Social Security today, nothing will change. You will get your check.
More sincere, more
sincere. The system
sincere.
Is solvent enough.
Much better.
The system is solvent.
Ooh, S's.
For people born before 1950.
No.
The reason I have to say that is because many of you are aware of what takes place in politics. People say the darndest things to try to change people's opinions. They might say, you know, if so-and-so gets elected, you're not going to get your Social Security check. In other words, the people have been using Social Security
and S's.
To vote
fucking
A,
P's, S's, P's.
So therefore, when I'm talking about the reform, I want you to recognize, one, Social Security is important. And two, if you're a senior, you have nothing to worry about. You will get your check. But if you've got a grandchild, you've got plenty to worry about if you care about your children and grandchildren. Here's why. There's a lot of us getting ready to retire. We're called baby boomers.
Ba-ba-ba-ba, worse than pee. Now, come on.
In fact, my retirement age...
Snap out of it.
...is
George,
2008.
George.
I turned 62 in 2000. It's kind of convenient. And there's a lot of us. As a matter of fact, by the time the baby boomers fully retire, there's going to be over 70
sounds
million of
sincere,
us.
Sounds sincere.
That's compared
sincere,
to 40-some-odd sincere. Million today. So the number of retirees that the system will have to take care of is increasing dramatically. And we're living longer.
Yes. Nailed it.
A lot of baby boomers have been, working out and taking care of our bodies, making good choices, and medicine's better. And we're living longer. This is the fact. We're living longer than the previous generation. And we've been promised greater benefits.
Much better.
People running for office saying, vote for me, I'm going to give you more benefits when it comes to Social Security. And sure enough, they got elected and they kept a promise. So you've got a lot of people getting ready to retire who are living longer, who are getting greater benefits, and fewer people paying into the system. In 1950, there were like 15
P's,
workers to one
S's,
beneficiary.
George. P's and S's.
In other words, you had a lot of workers relative to the number of beneficiaries. Today, there's 3.3 workers per beneficiary. Relatively quickly, it'll be 2 workers per beneficiary. Fewer people paying greater benefits to greater number of people who are living longer.
Maybe you remember it this way.
Secondly,
S&P.
Social Security is not a savings account. In my travels around the country, I hear people say, why don't you just give us the money back we put in? But that's not the way Social Security works. It's a pay-as-you-go system. You pay, we go ahead and spend.
Oh.
You pay through payroll taxes. We spend on paying for the beneficiaries, the retirees for that year. But if we've got any money left over, we didn't save it for you. We spent it on government. That's the way it works. It's a pay-as-you-go. And then there's all that's left over is a file cabinet full of IOUs. I have seen the file cabinet in West Virginia firsthand, and I saw all the IOUs. But the system is not the kind of system where we're holding the money for you. It's not the way it works. We're spending your money
and left behind some
paper that can only be good if the government decides to redeem the paper. That's a pay-as-you-go system. The pay-as-you-go system starts to go in the red because it's going to pay out more in benefits than it collects in taxes in 2017.
Right.
That's 12 years from now. If you've got a six-year-old child, that'll be about the time your child starts to drive. If the driving age is 18 here in Wisconsin. In 2027, by the way, the situation gets worse every year. Fewer people paying in for more beneficiaries. In 2027, the system will be $200 billion for that year in the red. I don't know where they're going to get the money. Every year it gets worse. In 2032, it's like $300 billion in the red. In 2041, it's bust.
Yes, yes.
Now, if you're a senior, you have nothing to worry about because we've got plenty of money for you. But if you're a young worker, a young entrepreneur, a young mom paying into the system, you're paying into a bankrupt system unless the United States Congress decides to act. Now, I see a problem. I fully recognize that some in Washington don't see a problem. They'd rather, you know, kind of sweep this issue under the rug. But that's not the job of the president.
Grab yourself. Touch your knee.
The job of the president is to confront problems and not pass those problems on to another president or another Congress or another generation. And I realize if we don't act, it's going to cost $600 billion a year because of inaction. And I realize if we don't act, we're liable to saddle a younger generation of Americans with an 18% payroll tax to make good for the promises that you made for me.
Just glance at it. Glance at it.
And that's not fair. And that's not right.
I taught you.
And so I went in front of the Congress and said, we got a problem. Said at the State of the Union. I also told the leadership that I plan on campaigning on this issue. In other words, traveling the country, doing exactly what we're doing here. Making it perfectly clear to the American people we have a problem. Guess what? They now know we got a problem.
Houston, you got it.
And that's bad news for people in Washington, D.C. who'd rather do nothing. Because once the people figure out we got a problem, the next question they're going to say to members of the United States Congress is, what do you intend to do about it?
Yes.
Now, I have an obligation to do more than just say we got a problem. I got an obligation to say, here's some ideas that we got to work on. First, anything we do, we got to make sure that future generations receive benefits equal to or greater than benefits enjoyed by today's seniors.
Damn it.
I think that's a reasonable principle.
Oh, man.
Secondly, I believe that I know we can solve a lot of the issue by embracing what's called progressive indexing of benefits. It's a long word, fancy words for this. Here's what happens. The promises Congress has made says that your benefits will rise based upon wage increases.
Damn it.
If you were to say to the upper income folks, your benefits will rise based upon inflation.
Dork.
You've gone a long way to solving the solvency problem. It sounds simple. But it basically means that poor people won't have to retire into poverty.
P's and S's.
And the wealthier people in America will get benefits that increase with the rate of inflation. For people born prior to 1950.
Better.
I mean, after 1950.
George, grab a hold of yourself. Grab.
That progressive indexing plan does a couple of things. One, I think it is an important principle to say to somebody who's been working all their life in a hard job that you're not going to retire into poverty.
It wasn't important, you dork.
America can make that promise. And it's a promise we ought to make for people. It makes sense.
Okay, better.
We want our people retiring with dignity.
Yes, dignity.
That's one way to make the Social Security system better. But it also makes sense to say to somebody who doesn't think they're going to see any benefits anyway, you're going to get benefits. They're just not going to grow quite as fast. They'll grow.
Oh, you're good.
They're going to be bigger or equal to or bigger than the previous generation. They're just not going to be quite as big as the government promised
Hold the delivery.
The politicians promised. They'll be bigger.
You got it.
But for the sake of solvency and permanency, if we don't do this, you're going to be saddled with a $200 billion a year bill in 2027. In other words, there's a reasonable approach that I'm confident that Congress, if it takes a look at, will see it is reasonable. Now we got to come together and solve other problems to make sure we permanently solve the issue. I keep saying permanently because I remember 1983 when President Reagan and Speaker O'Neill, in the spirit of bipartisanship, said we got a problem with Social Security. And they came together and said we're going to put out a 75-year fix. The problem is we're now 22 years later and that 75-year fix didn't stick. In other words, if we're going to sit down at the table, let's get it done forever. Let's say to a younger generation of Americans, we're going to permanently solve the Social Security issue so you can grow up with peace of mind.
Yes, yes.
I'm almost through. I think as we permanently fix the system, there's an opportunity to make the system a better deal for younger workers. And so I've asked Congress to consider this idea. Younger workers ought to be allowed to take some of their own payroll taxes, if they so choose.
Yes.
And set up a personal savings account.
Nice, nice.
Some of the taxes will be in that they pay. After all, it's their money they're paying. They ought to be allowed to take some of their money.
Scratch your face or something. Damn it.
And set up a personal savings account. Here are the benefits for doing that. One, the government does a lousy job on getting a good rate of return on your money. As a matter of fact, that people calculate that the Social Security system, you earn about 1.8% on your money. That's not a very good deal. You see, if you have a personal savings account, you could do a lot better than 1.8%.
Nice.
In a conservative mix of bonds and stocks, you can get up to 7 or 8%.
4%.
If you're just only in T-bills, you do better than 1.8%. And it's that difference in interest that over time compounds, it means a lot.
Compounds would have been fine.
In other words, if you start setting aside money with a decent rate of return, it grows over time. It compounds. And it's that power of compound interest which younger workers ought to be allowed to take advantage of. But the system today doesn't let them take advantage of that. Let me give you an example. If you're a 20-year-old mom earning $8 an hour over the career, and you're allowed to take a third of your payroll taxes and put it in a conservative mix of bonds and stocks, by the time that person retired, she would have a $100,000 nest egg. See, that's the power of compound interest.
That's fine.
Here's
stocks
another interesting example for you. Say you've got a child, and that child decides to become a police force, marries a nurse, they're in the workplace and
become
11.
Police force.
And they work their entire careers. They set aside money based upon the average salary of a policeman and nurse. By the time they retired at 65, they would have $669,000 nest egg. That's what money does when it grows. That's what happens. And people ought to be allowed to take advantage of that if they choose. The government's not saying you have to set up a personal retirement. I fully understand some people might not feel comfortable
about putting
their money in bonds and stocks. I know that. That's why this is a personal savings account, a voluntary personal account.
Damn.
Government's not saying you must do this. We're saying if you so choose, you should be allowed to make that decision.
God, I need drugs.
You know why? The world has changed when it comes to investors. We're about to talk to some young investors. I can assure you, when I was their age, I wasn't spending much time thinking about 401ks. They didn't exist. There wasn't a lot of talk about people running how's your IRA doing? They didn't exist. The whole notion of people being entrusting people with their money and watching it grow is changing. The culture's changing. The investor class is no longer confined to just a few people. The investor class is varied, and we ought to have policies in place that encourage every American to become an owner, an investor, and watch their assets grow.
Yes, 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 yes.
Laura said don't get too long-winded, but it's not working.
Okay, slow down.
A couple of other points I want to make. The system is inherently unfair to some. If you and your spouse are working,
okay, wind it down.
And both of you contribute to the Social Security system and one of you die early, when you turn 62, you get a choice to make. You can either take the benefits accrued in the Social Security system to you.
Perfect.
Or to your husband, but not both. Think about that. Somebody's worked all their life, contributed to the system, dies early, and the money just disappears. That doesn't seem fair to me. That doesn't seem fair to me that a fellow American's working all his or her life, contributing the system, and then
dies
early.
Damn.
And the surviving spouse gets a burial benefit, and at 62 gets the greater of the benefit structure, but not both. That's not fair. If you allow a younger worker to set aside money and watch that asset base grow, you're really saying if something bad happens to you, you can pass that asset on to your surviving spouse. I like the idea of giving the capacity to a lot of people to be able to transfer assets from one generation to the next. That's what America's about. Before we get to our panel, a couple of other points.
Thank one, God, you can't people take are your dumber money than you. The lottery. Thank God, mainstream
no,
America.
No, this isn't one of the deals where it's, you know, you can take it and put it in high flyers. This is a retirement fund. This is a safety net. Therefore, there's going to be a conservative mix of bonds and stocks available
stocks
for you to choose from. You can mix it up between bonds and stocks and T-bills any way you want. But you cannot take your money to the track. In other words, it's a safety net. There will be guidelines. Secondly, there will be fee structures that are reasonable. Wall Street can't rip you off in this deal. I'm sure you've heard people say, oh, Bush is playing, you know, this is going to give Wall Street a windfall. But wait a minute, there are all kinds of public retirement funds that exist around the country where the fee structures are reasonably managed. You'll be treated fairly.
Get to the point.
You know, speaking about that, all kinds of retirement systems around, I don't know if you know this or not, but the United States Congress took a look at this idea in what's called the Thrift Savings Plan. That's the federal savings plan.
S&Ps.
And they thought about maybe giving somebody the option of putting their money in a conservative mix of bonds and stocks. Because they, the people who voted on that must have recognized the power of compound interest. And guess what happened? They adopted a plan that says members of the United States Congress, if they so choose, could take some of their own money and set it aside in a conservative portfolio of bonds and stocks. Here's my attitude about that. And it should be the attitude of the American people. If setting aside money so it can grow better in a conservative mix of bonds and stocks is okay for United States senators, it ought to be okay for workers all across America. Ready to go? I think we'll get something done. I really do.
That was not a joke.
I think the American people understand we got a problem. I think seniors are now beginning to understand
to
all the scare tactics, all the propaganda. It's just that.
God, I need drugs.
And they're going to get
drugs.
Their checks.